The Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And we are Jeffrey-less today.
Oh.
Yes.
The part of Jeffrey Willarth will be played by Michael.
There we go. Well, Jeffrey, I mean Michael, then
I don't
you can
think
tell
you
us all
have
the
enough
scoop.
Tequila to fill that role.
I'll go get my tequila.
I was going to say, now you throw down the gauntlet on that one.
Somehow. No. That was not an invitation to a drinking contest.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
That was not.
I see.
I was just making an observation that you were without a tequila right there.
That's true. I do not have a tequila right there. It's right there. And there.
Okay.
And over there. And back there.
Yeah, Mike doesn't have a drinking problem. He drinks, also, no problem.
Not a problem at all.
Not a problem.
I are a professional. I do this there every week.
Yes. Well, I am currently waiting to see what kind of feedback we get from last week's show. From the one recorded, our very first foray into recording a show fully out of the Farpoint Media Los Angeles studio.
Yes.
And we really, really, really needed to have a live feed up on that.
I'm very interested in hearing this show.
Brad may be out of a job. Brad did a bang-up editing job, you should know, but there were enough... So it was a colorful discussion in between the recording that would have kept the live feed listeners very entertained, and it's really a shame that we didn't have that.
Right. On the other hand, had we tried to have that, I think that would have overtaxed our resources of the moment, the human resources especially.
Yeah, well, no, I think if we had been able to feed out, see, I don't know what kind of connection Jeffrey has. I don't know. We should have been able to feed out, but he didn't have
the
hardware.
What are you looking for, little girl?
I want the entire Narn home world now. Anyway, yes, we are.
Anyway,
yes, we are actually closing in very, very quickly on the. On the time to update our intro.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Just so everyone
Please.
Knows, just so everyone knows that we go on the anniversary of the podcast, not the closing of the physical Babylon 5 season or the calendar year.
That's so coming up quick, right?
That's coming up very quick.
Good.
Like February.
Cool.
So
can't wait.
Michael doesn't like the sound quality on the preview.
Michael,
I don't like having my ears blown out with that intro because the pops and the peas and the boom, 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 boom.
Okay.
Drives me crazy.
Okay.
It's a stylistic thing, Mike. You have to
it is. Okay. It's very engaging and painful.
But it feels so good when it stops, now, doesn't it?
It's true.
You see?
We'll get just a couple more and you'll be fine.
Okay.
Can't wait.
Yes.
I can't wait.
That was me dropping a hint to Tim saying I need a script.
I sent you one.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh.
Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you kids. Am I going to have to turn this podcast around?
You're going to have to separate it.
I think so.
You on the other side of the continent. You on the other side of the continent.
We'll be back with Deep Geeking in just a minute.
You can find culture at the theater. you can find culture in the bottom of an unwashed coffee mug. Or you can find culture on your iPod. Join Brad, Glenn, and Christina on Pod Culture, Equal Opportunity Geekness. Go to www.podculture.net.
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom, this is Deep Geeking.
And this is actually the one time where I wish Jeffrey were here for Deep Geeking, because tonight's episode that we're talking about is a late delivery from Avalon, and I want to know what it was like to, you know, just be there when Michael York came on.
Well, I was hoping Jeffrey would be here because I really wanted to talk to him about that. But I did go to the Lurker's Guide, and there were a couple of comments posted by JMS on the Lurker's Guide about that. Now, of course, this is dated when the show was in production. And he talks about how Michael York did not behave like a star. Apparently, he was very warm, very engaging, very engaged. In fact, he didn't even show any consternation when JMS asked Mr. York to autograph his Laserdisc copy of Cabaret.
Oh, wow.
So, there you have it. And of course, as you know, all of us good geeks know that Michael York was in the film version of Logan's Run.
Mm-hmm.
So he has some geek cred that way.
Excellent.
And as has been revealed in the B5 script books by the great maker, his original idea to cast for the replacement of Commander Jeffrey Sinclair was going to be Michael York.
I missed that one.
Yes, it's in there. I don't have the book in front of me, of course, and so how ill-prepared am I? But apparently, as I recall reading, he wanted Michael York to take over. I don't know if it got, I don't remember if it got to negotiation stages, but the word is that the folks at Warner's nixed the idea because they figured the universe already had one English-accented Starship captain running around, and they didn't think it would be a good idea to have two.
A little short-sighted, but okay.
Well, right, exactly. But, you know, I mean, that's one of those things. How would the show have been different had it been Michael York, who was, you know, at that point even an older actor than Bruce Boxleitner? You know, how would that have affected the kind of episodes and characters that we were given?
I think it would have sounded, that would have changed the whole tone, everything of, because I'm actually having a trouble picturing Michael York doing some of the things that we see Bruce doing.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
It's not an acting thing or an intensity thing. It's just a different demeanor in character. And I don't know if it being done differently would have made the show better or worse. I mean, literally, we can't say. But it would have changed the entire tone of it. At the very least, season 3 and season 4 would have completely felt completely different.
I would agree. I would not hesitate to say whether it would have been better or worse. You know, and there's really no way to know, but I agree. I mean, some of the physicality of things that happened with Sheridan, I just don't see a Michael York character performing. Not to say that Michael York, the actor, would not have been capable. I agree with you. I think there's a different tone. You know, and I guess that leads into it what he brought in the role of so-called King Arthur in A Late Delivery from Avalon. So let's leap into it. Here we have a gentleman arrives on the station claiming to be Arthur, King of the Britons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let me tell you this. I'll just get it out of my system now.
Okay.
Kick it to you!
My favorite.
You're the Britons!
My favorite line. Watery tarts lobbing about scimitars is no basis for a form of government.
As the Supreme Executive Power drives from a mandate from the masses, not from some possible aquatic sediment.
Okay.
Be quiet. Yes, okay. Very good. There we go. We got it out of the way.
All right. No more Monty Python. No more Monty Python this episode. Oh, but yes.
No, but if we go into quotable quotes, and I will jump ahead, Jakars, and they made a most agreeable thump when they fell.
Yes, that's a great line.
Did I say that already?
Yes, that's a great line.
So anyways, gentleman arrives on station, and he is stopped at the customs because he set off the weapons alert. He's got a sword strapped to his side, and when security attempts to disarm him, he draws the thing and proclaims, you know, I know I've been gone for a long time, but are your memories that short? And fortunately, by coincidence known as plot, Marcus and Dr. Franklin are heading toward the entrance area. And, of course, see all these people running the other way. So they're, well, what's going on? Marcus immediately gloms onto what's going on. Because as he comes up and says, you know, forgive them, my lord. They, you know, you've been gone for so long. Nobody remembers who you are. And plays along with this charade of Arthur. And, of course, he convinces Arthur to go to med lab so that the doctor can examine him. And Arthur protests, you know, no, I've had enough of physicians that they're leeches. And Marcus then tells him, well, it's required by our captain. And if the doctor doesn't get to perform his duty, he will be harshly punished.
Yes, I thought that was a very nice touch. The human angle. It's like, you know, like he will be punished for not doing his job. This won't put you out any, please. Come with us.
Right. And Arthur's response, well, you know, I've been treated by physicians and the Nine Sisters, and what's one more?
Yes.
And so in med lab, of course, Dr. Franklin gives an examination, asks him how he got to the station, and Arthur says, well, you know, I'm not quite sure, and recounts his last memories, such as they are, being at the Battle of Calan, and fighting against Mordred's army and asking Sir Bedivere to throw the Excalibur back to the Lady of the Lake, and he was almost too late, and the old wound. But as he's talking, we get flashes of him in a hallway with doors.
Yes.
And
I thought that visual is very intriguing. He's in a hallway with lots of doors. And you don't know if they're locked. You don't know if he's just afraid to open them. But one door keeps popping open, and he turns away from it.
Right. Well, there's the one scene where he's in that dream state, and he tries a door, and it's locked. And as he backs away from it, he presses up against one, which opens on its own. And, of course, reveals Minbari battlecruisers. And Star Fury is being destroyed. And incidents from the Battle of the Line. And other things as well, as we find out. We get one of the scenes I like is the briefing scene where they've got Franklin and Garibaldi and Sheridan getting together to talk about a treaty. And Marcus is there, and they, you know, bring up the fact that, you know, Sharon is like, well, he thinks he's who? It's like, well, he thinks he's King Arthur. It's like, well, who is he really? It's like, well, you know, we don't know. We're running DNA tests. We're trying to find out. And Marcus says, well, you know, the Vorlons have been to Earth.
Yes, yes.
And I like that because what happens is he starts drawing Franklin into it.
Yes.
And Garibaldi's expression is he's looking at him. you know, Franklin's like, well, you know, and it could be.
Yeah, and by bringing up Vorlon interference in human affairs, that we know, like he brought up Sebastian,
right?
And and you see Franklin kind of go, oh, you know, that's not impossible. Now that you
right.
mention it, and
right.
yeah, who's to say that you know that wasn't a Vorlon on that barge pretending to be, you know, three Vorlons being the three
right.
queens, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then Garibaldi's look, he just looks at him with this look like.
You know? I believe the look is, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, right, right. And then Frank goes, oh, no. You know, the vocabulary is all wrong. You know, is the inflection. It's, you know, he's definitely not Arthur. But you know, just that moment. Just for that moment. And then yeah. and then that leads to the next part of it where, and then we're skipping ahead a bit, where Franklin does discover Arthur's true nature. And reveals that to Marcus, and that's David McIntyre, if I remember the last name correctly.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Who was the gunnery sergeant on the Prometheus at that fateful encounter between human and Nimbari.
The man who fired the shot that killed, that led to Dukat's death and to the Earth-Nimbari War.
Yes, and the Battle of the Line, where 20,000 went out and 200 returned.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the numbers that Franklin recounted didn't seem right.
I don't think they jived either. I didn't.
Because he said 250,000 dead, and I'm like, total during the entire war, that sounds a little low.
Yes, right. I would agree.
That was going to be my homework, to go research if there had been an effect. A mention of the total human casualties during the entirety of combat during the war. Has the war lasted 3 years or two?
Yeah. You know what? I don't remember, actually. But, you know, given that, you would think even with limited engagement,
mm-hmm.
the totals would have to be higher.
Yeah. I'm just guessing.
I agree with you. So I don't know if Franklin. See, I got the impression that Franklin was strictly talking about the Battle of the Line. You know, because as he mentioned, 200 returned. So
yeah.
That tells me that, you know, you can't fight an entire war with only 200 people coming back. I mean, that's just not. That's just not believable. At that point.
Yeah.
But having said that.
Yes.
Marcus's point is like, well, you can't show this to him. Franklin says, why not? It's like, because it'll destroy him. Are you kidding? Let him be Arthur. What's wrong with that? And, you know, Franklin, of course, he's... But I think it's Marcus says, what about your Hippocratic Oath? Do no harm.
Do no harm, yeah.
And Franklin's response is, I've got to tell him. He's got to know the truth. And, of course, the thing is, he does know the truth. He's just hiding from it.
Yes. And it's really interesting that, you know, later when, like, Franklin is chastising himself for choosing to tell him and sending McIntyre into a catatonic state, he's like, you think I'd learn? But his,
yeah.
you can't really fault him because he's, his stance is always, you know, the truth is what's best. You know, it'll set you free. Even if you don't like it, if the truth is out there, everything eventually will be all right.
Right. Well, even beyond that, they don't really say it as such, but, you know, think about a doctor's role.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when you've got to, I mean, we're getting a little extreme here. The limb is infected with gangrene. You got to cut the leg off if you're going to save the patient. Okay? I mean, you just got to. And my thought is that's kind of what Franklin's approach was. It's like he's not going to get any better if he continues with this delusion that he's Arthur. And, of course, Marcus's point is, you know, making it worse, how could it be worse? You know, he's functioning. He's obviously functioning. And as we see in that wonderful scene where he's wandering and down below, and finds the old woman weeping over the theft of her husband's portrait. There goes Arthur to the rescue to take on those brigands. And, you know, whatever else you say about his mental state is, obviously, he's got a sense of goodness and righteousness and justice. And Marcus sees that. And, you know, that's his point. It's like, mm-hmm. he's doing good in the world.
Yes.
Why destroy him?
Yes. And his quest to do good for the weak and the defenseless leads us to finding out a couple of things. We see Jakar has been using regular humans, not rangers, to get messages in and out of Narn. And right. I actually thought that was kind of interesting because I thought the whole point was to use the rangers because that's what they do.
Well, but he's not in the circle at this point, if you remember. And the one time that they got the message through, that was early on, and Jakar had no knowledge of the Rangers as such. I mean, you know, he does tell Delenn, I've heard a curious term here, but he doesn't know that that's what Sheridan, the means by which Sheridan got that first message through in order for Jakar to maintain his prominence with the Narn on the station.
So was his whole thing, because he went to Garibaldi and Sheridan asking for help in getting this message through.
Right.
And then he decides to find his own way after?
Yes, because I don't see a problem with it, because at no point did Sheridan ever promise a permanent channel.
This is true, yeah.
You know, Jakar said, I just need to get a word to homeworld and back out again. You know, I got to have this. What can you do for me? Sheridan says, okay, well, we'll let you know. And then talks to Garibaldi. It's like, I send the Rangers. Well, they're not ready. It's like, well, I got to be ready. We got to get them going.
Yeah.
So. What struck me with that was that it's in tone similar to other deals we've seen Jakar strike with humans, most notably for the dust.
Mm-hmm.
Except this is, innocuous isn't the right word, but I think it reflects Jakar's change of character. Whereas before the incident with Malari and the dust, it was all about smuggling weapons, you know, doing damage, working with the resistance. This was all about getting a message through. You know, and it's a whole different tone to the exchange.
It seemed to be more than just, you know, messages between families. It might have also been like intelligence.
Well, that could be true. You're right. I mean, they didn't really get to the
right because
exact
they were interrupted by sounds of an impending scuffle.
Well, Arthur is already taken out for. He's already taken out four of the brigands.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's got the leader basically at the point of Excalibur, says, you know, surrender this or surrender your life. No chance. I've got allies. And turns around and here comes a posse of
Reinforcement thugs.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, at that point, Jakar vaults the rail and says, well, so does he.
Yeah. Yes, and I almost wish that we had seen some of that fight, because just his glee at describing how it's been so long since I've been in a real fight, not any intrigues or battles, just a real fight.
Yeah.
And they make such a, was it satisfying thump?
Yes, right.
A resounding
thump. When they fell with a satisfying thump. Yes. Yeah, and I like that term, as he says. There's no moral ambiguities.
Mm-hmm. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys, and they make a nice thump.
right. And Arthur knights him, Sir Jakar, the Red Knight.
Yes,
you are unlike any other knight. You have a certain, and Jakar's expression is like, you know, like as long as he doesn't even know what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
like, you know, what do you mean I'm different?
Yeah, he's like, what are you talking about? And then you see
your eyes have a certain fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's like, you see the bit of reverence when he's being knighted. Like, yes, he understands that this is a big deal.
Yes. Yep. Starting the round table again. And I love that they're drinking away, and Jakar is getting absolutely plowed. Because when Marcus shows up again, you know, I heard about what happened. So, oh, yes. He should have been there. And they made a most agreeable thump. Did I say that already?
Yes. And you know, Marcus bringing Arthur back into, well, I wouldn't say, I don't think custody is the right word. Just, you know, they know where he is now.
Right.
And his little...
Right.
And
as he says, I love that, Mr. Garibaldi is quite put out, in Jakar's comment. Mr. Garibaldi is always put out.
And the funny part about that is when Jakar keels over after having imbibed too much, and he said that's why they called Gawain the Green Knight.
The Green Knight, yes, right. It's the next morning.
I thought that was an inspired bit of artistic license. That was just brilliant. That was funny.
Yes. It was. That whole scene was very entertaining and very in character. I mean, I liked all of that. I don't think any of it was really outside the norms of the characters that we've seen. You know, and this is the scene where, of course, the next scene is where Stephen is talking with Marcus about what they're going to do with poor David McIntyre. And, of course, Stephen confronts him and says, no, you know who you are. Yeah, I'm Arthur. I'm King of the Britons. So, no, you're Gunnery Sergeant David McIntyre. You were on the Prometheus. And I liked how he was fighting off everything Franklin's saying. You know, the Prometheus, well, you know, there was a colony of Greeks in the kingdom, you see, and they brought their pagan gods with them, and, you know, Prometheus brought fires. No, Prometheus. Although, you know, now that I say that, that's an interesting little irony.
Oh?
Well, think about it. The ship that starts the war is Prometheus.
Brought fire from the gods.
Yes.
Brought fire from another race.
Right. Yes. I would not be surprised if that was intentional. Anyways, there you go. There's your insight for the night. But I liked how, you know, so he's using that, and he says, no, you know, you mistook the gun ports, and Arthur, David, goes back to the Battle of Culloden and how he was going to meet Mordred, and each side had 14 knights, and, you know, the word was that just, you know, play, basically, you know, nothing was going to happen unless you saw someone draw a sword. Well, sure enough, there's a snake on the battlefield about to strike, and somebody draws a sword to take care of it, and of course that's misunderstood, and that's the perfect analogy for what happened at that fateful meeting. And I just liked how, you know, the Arthurian tale gets woven into the events of the Babylon 5 epic. And the way that David McIntyre describes him and then just basically goes into that catatonia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, I was responsible for this. No, you weren't. You were absolved. No, I pulled the trigger. I started the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he just locks up.
Yeah. And then we have Franklin with his, yeah, you were right. You know, don't tell me you told me so, but I thought it would work. And then you have them trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah. I gave him back the sword because I thought it would help, but, you know, hasn't made a difference. You know, at that point it is. It's almost like Arthur on his pallet waiting to be born back to Avalon. And Franklin and Marcus start thinking, well, you know, okay, you know, I gave him back the sword. I must be Bedivere. And then, you know, well, who's the Lady of the Lake? And there's a 2-second pause, and they just look at each other. You know, it's one of those things that this going through this episode, you know, having watched it a handful of times, I go back and forth as to whether or not I think the next part is profoundly moving or 15 pounds of cheese. And right now I'm leaning toward, this time around I'm leaning toward profoundly moving.
I don't, well, describe what you mean by cheese, sir.
Well, I mean, when I look at it in with the eyes of you know, I'm not quite sure what to say, but, you know, when it, the times it's come across as cheesy, it's like, oh, well, it's the obvious thing. Okay, they'll bring Dylan out and, you know, and then everything's all better and he's healed and the sound of body and soul knitted together and all the rest. And, you know, at that point it seems, you know, obvious. But on the other hand, this time around watching it, I don't know whether I was just more open to how Michael York portrayed the character, because this time around I felt more empathy for the emotional pain the character was going through, so that when the opportunity comes to heal and let go, because that's what it is for him, he has to let go of this. And in a sense, the whole incident is represented by Excalibur. He returns Excalibur to the Lady of the Lake. He hands over the burden that he's carried for 15-odd years to Delenn. And it makes sense that it's Delenn in that she's, you know, obviously female, but she's also Minbari.
Well, I saw it. So, see, that's the part. I don't see the cheese factor because not only is she, you know, female and Minbari, but she was also there.
Yes.
Yeah, she had mentioned before, I don't know if it was before this or after this, how it was her actions. She had the opportunity to stop the retaliation. So she, in her own way, was also carrying a burden. And by meeting the one who, quote, started it all on for the Earth side and the one who started it all on the Minbari side coming together to absolve each other's sins, so to speak, it, for some reason, it paralleled, that meeting paralleled in my mind with the description that Marcus gave earlier about the Ranger pin.
Oh, yeah, right. That's a connection I hadn't thought of before. You're absolutely correct, yes. Yeah.
So that there was just, I mean, for me, that, you know, it took like probably four or five viewings, but there were, you know, each time there's several layers or several interpretations of several layers that of meaning in those two meeting like that, and, you know, maybe healing each other a little bit. I don't know.
Right.
That's
yeah.
the way I saw
well,
it.
And like I said, I think, you know, this time around when I viewed it, I was more open to the emotional impact of it. I know that in the past, and maybe this is just my own stone cold heart at play. You know, it's, why it struck me as cheesy, I'm not quite sure I can express at this moment. But I just, you know, I think it's profound that the concept of letting go, that has some meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I think that's, I think it's interesting to use that, the Arthurian legend in the Babylon 5 setting. I think it worked very well this time around. So
yes, and at the end with Gunnery Sergeant McIntyre going off to help Jakar's people in their resistance efforts.
Yes,
it was kind of poignant because he gets to help out again. People who are the weak, without any of the delusion. Right, and he gets to help out people who are truly in need.
Yeah.
And so we see him go.
Yeah.
And then you have Marcus again with, you know, hiding from his emotions.
I love the scene as McIntyre and Jakar walk toward the docking bay, and Franklin wishes him well, and Marcus sidles up to him, and Franklin doesn't even turn.
Yeah.
He just goes,
"Where were you?"
Yeah, right. And that's one of the other aspects I really enjoy about this episode. We really see the bond between those two characters strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how their hearts are in essence in the same place, but they just have a different way of trying to get there. And that's where conflict comes, but I think that's also where the bond starts growing.
Yep. And even though their final conversation is playful, it actually is foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah.
They're going through there. It's like, well, if you're Bedivere and I'm Gawain. No, he said Ivanova's Gawain. And
right. What did he say? I'm Galahad because of my sinless nature.
Right. And I thought that was a little interesting because we find out later, truly sinless, if you want to hold to the literal sense of the word of him being innocent. And then
he also thinks of himself, well, Jason Carter, we know, considered himself to be space Jesus. So.
That's true. He did. Yes, I forgot about that. But yes, you're correct. And then he asked the question right before the fade out, who is Morgana Le Fay?
Yeah.
And it's not until later that we go, oh, crap.
Yeah. And actually, I must confess that I'm not as well-versed in the Arthurian mythology as others. So I thought it was obvious at that point that it was, Sheridan, unless you have a different guess.
You thought Sheridan was Morgana Le Fay?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
If Sheridan was Arthur?
Yeah. Think about this. This is the other thing I did. After it was all over, because like I said, I am not as well-versed in Arthurian legend as people I've known in my past, so I did a little research. Morgan Le Fay, that character throughout time has shifted aspects, okay?
Mm.
But amongst them is that she was an apprentice to Merlin who turned her talent toward the dark arts. Now, if you think about the relationships between the Vorlons and the Shadows,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that she is... and the other thing is that she and other, now I'm jumping around because I can't get my thoughts together. Some of the other aspects is that she worked to reveal the infidelity of Queen Guinevere with Lancelot, worked a plot to overthrow Camelot. And again, it depends upon what period of time, who you're reading, and so forth, so on. But to me, it all added up to be Anna Sheridan.
Hmm. And literally, it never dawned on me that she was still alive until she walked through the door.
Oh, well, no. We're talking about in retrospect now. Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, no,
definitely. When you mentioned that.
In retrospect, yeah. Oh, yeah, easily. You know who it is. But at the time, right. When you're watching you're going, who? Who is it? Who can it be? Because, like, you're trying to think of, literally, I'm like, it can't be Talia because she's gone.
Right.
And, like, I can't, unless they're, like, setting Lita up to come back as a bad guy, I couldn't see it. And then Anna Sheridan walked in. I'm like, oh, okay.
Right. Yes, at the time when the question was first posed.
I was trying to figure out, how did you even know that was
coming? No. Yeah. First time around, clueless.
Yeah,
utterly.
Okay.
In fact, to me, it was just, at the time, to me, it was such a weird way to end the episode. With a question like that?
Planting a seed.
Huh?
Planting a seed.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was planting a seed, and at the time, for me, it's like, what? The seed fell on barren soil.
Well, no, it was actually very
for
good
me,
because...
Anyways.
Okay.
No,
well,
I know.
All right.
Yeah.
It was a very good seed. It was a very good seed because it was phrased as an innocent question,
yeah.
But it was done in such a way that it would stick in your mind.
Right, yes.
It would just stick there, literally, yeah. You know, literally the splinter in your mind is just hitting there and going, okay, that means something. He wouldn't have, what does he mean by that?
Right,
ah!
Right.
And then when that episode comes up, you're going, oh, crap.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, that's actually the second hint we've had of that because, actually, no. That's the first hint. The second hint comes up in a few more episodes.
War Without End. We get the lens.
Vision. Yeah.
And that one, now I will tell you that, well, Chris, we'll get to that at the point, but I will say that when I saw that vision, I knew who that was. It was one of those weird flashes. I knew instantly in that scene. Not from the question, I'll give you that, not from the question about who's Morgan Le Fay, but that scene where Belen drops the snow globe.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was one of those intuitive beats, like, oh my.
I will have to hand it to you. Yeah. I did not have it then. I'm sitting here not totally not seeing it. And I think it was because they used Melissa Gilbert's voice and not the voice we heard the original Anna Sheridan in the earlier vid.
That's because the original Anna Sheridan had to go be Tasha Yar's sister. So
yeah, that she did. She again, someone else was busy on Next Generation and couldn't.
What is it with that show?
I don't know. Inextricably linked, but
anyways,
I think we're covered.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the only other thing that we didn't touch on, and we just kind of went through is we get
the postal service.
Settle down, Mike. Settle down.
The postal service.
Well, yes, the postal service. I was going to get to that next, but I just wanted to touch on Sheridan and Ivanova trying to gather what's left of the League of Non-Aligned Worlds together.
Yes.
I like that because, you know, this is one of those transitional things that prior to Babylon 5, you know, you'd have big events, but then nobody would come in and fill in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And here is filling in the details. Okay, we've broken away from Earth. We know that half you people are at war with the other half, but if this place is going to work, we need you guys to pony up. And of course they do with some despair. I like that bit. Well, you know, I got some news for you, Captain.
Yeah.
You know, some of them stormed out and went to sign it. Ah, but those who did,
we're good.
Yeah. So I like that. I thought that was a nice bit. And yes, the postal service with Garibaldi trying to get his
last
mozzarella
shipment of
and garlic and the
pepperonis that are this big.
Yes, the small ones and the really big ones. 100 credits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the scene where he just goes sneaking around. He's basically Garibaldi's been out Garibaldi.
Yeah. I like how his wingman is like, this is the postal service. You can really get in trouble.
Right. What are you talking about? We just, you know, we've told our own people, we face daily menaces. Yeah, but this is the post office. And sure enough, the guy is waiting for him. I thought you'd try something like this.
Absolute awe and terror. No, but this is the post office. We can get in real trouble here.
Yeah.
It really makes me wonder if, like, JMS had a disagreement about a package or something.
Wouldn't be surprised. He nuked San Diego.
That is true. For that reason,
you know. So, yeah. And then Garibaldi, of course, at the end turns the tables.
Yes.
You know, okay, you know, just pay your 100 credits off. But, you know, by the way.
Who's paying your rent now?
That's right. How much is it going to cost me? 101 credits. Yeah.
You got to love Garibaldi.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Just like, you know, that expression he shoots Steven. You're not really buying this, are you?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, working with the post office, classic stuff. So a fun episode. You know, it's one of those episodes that I think is overlooked.
Mm-hmm. It is. Because You at first glance, it doesn't seem to have a whole lot to do with the overall story, but there's little nuggets in there that do, that tie everything in. So, definitely.
All right, I think we're done.
We're done with the deep geeking for now. We'll be back in just a minute.
Tell us a little bit about the ADD cast.
Well, it's a freeform beer cast, kind of, ooh, shiny. What's that?
Hey, put that down. You could break it.
Sorry, I just get sidetracked sometimes.
It's okay. Just tell us about the show.
Yeah, right. We talk about tech stuff, beer, philosophy, laundry, religion. Oh, and did you see that cool video with that Japanese girl folding t-shirt technique thing? It's like magic t-shirt origami. You pick it up and wham! Perfect t-shirt fold, which reminds me of this Voltron t-shirt I used to have. It's a funny story.
Do you have guests on the show?
Right, the show. You mean the Balticon podcast?
No, the ADD cast.
Yeah, we have lots of fun on the ADD cast. We talk about everything.
But you get sidetracked a lot.
No, we pretty much talk about tech stuff and, hey, is that one of those new Sony digital recorders? Let me see that.
No, not till we're done talking about the podcast.
Which podcast?
Oh, never mind.
Ooh, shiny.
The ADD cast. You never know quite what you're going to get, but it's always good.
www.addcast.net.
And we're back. Going to be a quick out.
Yep.
We have no email or no voicemails prepared.
Well, we have some, but I'm saving it up for next week.
Ooh, excellent. But yeah, I did want to follow up on was it Entozobad?
Yes.
Is that how you pronounce that?
Into's
request for if you had just one episode to convince someone that Babylon 5 is a show worth investing your time in, what would that one episode be?
He did send a bit of clarification. I asked for a few more details.
Mm-hmm.
And he indicated that his target was someone who had watched a couple first season episodes and found the stories trite and the dialogue stilted.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay. So, at that point, my suggestion back to him was In the Shadow of Zahadum. I think that's got some really snappy dialogue. I think it's got some great characters. It's got a good science fiction flavor. It sets up some central mysteries again. And I think it's one of those that especially for the time, broke the mold. Here we've got the stalwart captain behaving in a most irrational fashion that was not because he was possessed by some alien entity hell-bent on getting home or controlling the station. You know, he wanted answers, and by God, he was going to get answers no matter what the cost. And, you know, he's beset at all sides. You know, and the dialogue is sharp and, you know, sets up the great quandary. What would you do if you had this knowledge? You know, the whole Coventry analogy. And Zach is like, I don't think I could live with something like that. How do you decide something like that? Well, there it is. It's in Sheridan's lap. Yeah. So that was my vote. So send them in, folks. Let's get some good ideas for this person.
All right.
Okay.
That'll do it. So if you have your own, leave your comments on that on the website. But if you have your other own comments on any discussions we've had, you can send an email in to babylonpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year that Arthur came back from Avalon to save us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.